Okay, so what I wanted to do is a little bit just speak about Megillas Esther. And instead of giving an overview of the whole Megillah, or speak about the entire Megillah, I just want to go through the Psukim in the beginning, at least the beginning Perek, just to learn it with the Perish of the Gra, the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon gave a very, this is what it looks like, if anyone wants to get one. Anyway, it's tremendously layered. He shows how layered the Megillah is and how there's a lot going on behind the scenes. And he begins with asking the following question before we even get to the story. He says, the Gemara asks, where is there a remez, where is there a hint to Esther in the Torah? Funny question. Why do we really care? But it says, where is there a hint? And the Gemara says, because the pasuk says, "Va'anochi haster astir panai be'omahu," that Hashem says that I hide my face during the times of exile, in terms of times of difficulties. And haster is the word Esther, and that's the hint. That is the hint in the Torah to Esther. So the Vilna Gaon asks, "Why are we asking this question? And what does it mean?" So he says as follows. He says, what's the big deal about Megillas Esther? This whole story of Purim, we're all excited about Purim. Who cares? You know, how many miracles happened to many righteous people throughout the Jewish history? Tons, right? So why, what's so special about this miracle that all of a sudden we're making a holiday and we have a Megillah, we have to read the Megillah, etc.? So he says, because many of the miracles that happened were all in Eretz Yisrael. For example, Chanukah. Chanukah was in Eretz Yisrael. It was in Israel. In Israel, we live on a different plane. There's a whole different level of miracles that happen left and right. Anyone that looks at Jewish history, even the modern state of Israel, sees miracles left and right. And therefore, it's not so interesting. How do you see? It's interesting, but it's not as special. But how do you know that even when we're in the exile, when it's dark and difficult, how do you know that even there Hashem is performing these miracles and that it's something that Hashem is there? So we find a source in the Torah that the Torah talks about how Hashem is Esther, Hashem is Hastir. He hides his face in the exile, but he's there. He's there, and that is the point of the story of Purim and throughout the whole Megillah to try to put this into place, to see how every step of what happened was really Hashem moving pieces in order for the ultimate Yeshua, the ultimate salvation to occur. So it's our job, after reading the Megillah, not to just get down the story, but try to figure out, and everyone can use their imagination, and try to figure out how, why is this part of the story important? Why is this part of the story important? So we'll try to crack that a little bit to get us into the mindset of doing that, and hopefully as everyone continues learning the Megillah, we'll be able to think of new ideas and understand it on many levels. Okay, so let's start with the first pasuk. Vayhi bimei Achashverosh. Okay, it was in the times of Achashverosh. Just to put into context, Achashverosh was married to Vashti, as the Megillah tells us, and Vashti was the granddaughter of the Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar, after him came Belshazzar, and the daughter of Belshazzar was Vashti. So she was already in the royal kingdom. It's not like, you know, she just married in, which we're going to see is a very important part of the story moving forward. So Achashverosh, in times of Achashverosh, who Achashverosh, Hamalech Mehodu Vad Kush, he ruled over from India all the way to Ethiopia. Sheva Esumayam Medina. I'm not going to explain every single word, but he ruled over 127 provinces. Okay, so he was a king of a lot of people, lots of different provinces, a lot of different communities, cities, and therefore he was the big of the big. Now, what happened? By Yamim Mahaim, Kisheves Hamelach Achashverosh Al Kisei Malchuso. Achashverosh was sitting on his throne. Now, Asher B'Shushan Habira, which was in Shushan. Now, what's with this throne? What's important about this throne? So the Vilna Gaon explains, based on different midrashim, that Achashverosh wanted to sit. He didn't just want a throne. I mean, he's a big guy, 127 things he's in charge of. He has to sit on a very special throne. So which throne did he want to sit on? The throne of Shlomo HaMelech. Okay, he wanted the massive, gorgeous, incredible throne that Shlomo, King Solomon, sat on. Okay? But there were problems because the previous kings, like Nebuchadnezzar, who tried to sit on that throne, they got damaged. They don't work for them. Okay, there's something special about this throne. So he knew he couldn't just take King Solomon's throne and use it. He had to make a replica. No problem. Except for one problem. And that was the only people, the only place that he was able to find that they could actually make this replica of Shlomo HaMelech's throne was in this city called Shushan. Even though no king, not Nebuchadnezzar, not Belshazzar, Achashverosh, their capital, their place where their kingdom, where their palace was never in any of these provinces. It was always in Babel. Okay? But no one in Babel knew how to make this throne. It couldn't figure it out. So therefore, he found in Shushan that they knew how to make the throne. So he went ahead and he sent people to build the throne. Okay, there was a small problem. Because the throne was so big that once it was made, they couldn't figure out how to move it to Babel. So what happened? He had to go ahead and move his whole kingdom to Shushan. And that's why the story happened in Shushan. Historically, it didn't belong there. It should have been in Babel. But because he had to have this throne, and because the throne was built in Shushan, because that's the only place I was able to make it, and because he couldn't move it out of Shushan, therefore, he moved the whole party, no pun intended, to Shushan. Okay. Now, why is that important? Explains the Vilna Gaon, Hashem was already setting up the whole story. Because there was this tzaddik named Mordechai who lived in Shushan. And he was going to be the one that would save the Jewish people. So instead of bringing Mordechai all the way to Babel, Hashem just brought the entire place to Shushan so that it could all work out. So we already see from the very, very beginning that the story was being set up. The salvation was already in the first pasuk, the second pasuk, already telling us where Hashem was setting up all the pieces for the ultimate Yeshua to occur. Okay. He points out that we see this also in Pasuk Hey, if you look at the fifth Pasuk. So over there, when it describes who these people in Shushan were, he says the Ha'am Hanim Tsa'im b'Shushan Abira, the nation that was found in Shushan Abira. You don't say like, oh, you know, there's Rasman, he's found in Yerushalayim. You don't say the people where they live, they're found there. The idea was that Nebuchadnezzar came in. And he found these people there. That's the whole point. Like, he didn't expect to go there. They didn't expect to be there. So he found these people there. The whole place was moved over to there. Okay, so that was Hashem already setting up the story. Bishnas, sorry, a lot of pages here. Bishnas Shalosh L'malcho. In the third year of his reign, that's how long it took to build and set up this whole palace. Asa Mishtel Chosarav Avadav. He made a party. Now, why did Achashverosh make a party? The party was for the 127 provinces, right? All these people, all the Sarav and Avadav, all the place. He moved to a new place. There's a new capital of the kingdom, right? So he invited everyone over there. Why did he do that? So the simple explanation is, and this is what the Vilna Gaon explains, is because he wanted to make them happy and like him. Because he didn't want people to rebel. I mean, he's the ruler of the very, very vast amount of territory. So how do you know that some place in the middle of nowhere is not going to start rebelling against him, right? So in order to get everyone's buy-in, he invited everyone in to come and he could make a big party for them, show off, show how powerful he is, show how exciting he is, how strong he is, and that would help him make it that no one rebels against him. We'll see why that's a very important point as we move forward. So he made this party, Chel, Paras, Madai, from Persia, from Madai, Partun, Surah, Medinos, Lefanav, all these people came. Now, what did he do at this party? Pasuk Dalet Beharo, so is Osher, Kavod, Malchuso, Vesikar, Teferes, Duaso. He showed off lots of his treasures. The Medrash tells us that there were 1,080 treasure troves. He had a whole thing of treasures, 1,080 of them, that he wanted to show off. Where did he get these from? So Nebuchadnezzar really was the one who conquered and had all these treasures. He buried them along the Euphrates River. Maybe over the Ben Azmanim, we'll go to see if we can find some. Okay, but he buried them there. And then Cyrus, Koresh, who was after him, He went ahead and he gave permission to build the Beis HaMikdash, and Hashem gave Koresh the ability to find them. So maybe he won't find any. But he was able to find them, okay? So he had 1,080 treasure troves. Okay. Achashverosh inherited it from Koresh. So now Achashverosh has all these treasures. And he wanted to show them off. 1,080, you need to keep things fresh. You know, like you go to a museum for the first time, you see it's exciting, you go maybe a second day, and after that, you can't go a third day, and a fourth day, and a fifth day, it's very hard. So you have to keep it fresh. And they were massive treasure stuff, right? So therefore, he showed six every single day, which is what the Pasuk says in Pasuk Dalet. It says, he showed Osher, Kavod, Malchuso, Yakar, Tiferet, Gedulato. Those were showing that six every single day he would show. Now, if you have 1,080 treasure troves, and you're showing six a day, how many days do you need to show off the entire thing?
180.
Yamim rabim shmonim u'ma'at yom. There are 180 days of this party. Okay? So there are 180 days for this party to the entire 127 provinces. Six treasure troves every single day. It kept things moving, kept things exciting. Everyone was there. Everyone they wanted to stay for another day. Okay, 180 is not just 10 times chai, 10 times 18. It's not like nothing Kabbalistic over here with 180. It was practical. He had all these 1,080 stuff. He had to show it off. Six a day was the most appealing, and therefore it took 180 days. Okay. Next. Uvimlos ha'yimim eila pasakei. It says when these 180 days were all finished, he made another party for 7 days for the people in Shushan. Okay? They weren't part of that, or they weren't fully part of that 180 days. There was a new party. And what happened over there in that party? So he decorated the chatzer of the palace. He decorated it with chur, karpas, tcheles, achuz, b'chav, levutz, v'argaman. He had tiles of marble and tapestries, and he made things like really, really exciting. Okay? What's the deal over here? Why is this important in the whole story? Okay? The 180 days, why is that important? And that he had a lot of riches, and that he's showing it off. Why is that important in the story? Or even in Shushan, that he decorated, and why was that important? We have four psukim over here which are irrelevant. In fact, there are pins in the Gemara that when you read the story of the Megillah, you could start later on, because this is irrelevant. But we don't hold that way, right? We read it from all the way from the beginning. So that means there's a certain relevance to the story here. Who cares? For example, if you want to contrast for a minute, we'll get soon to the party of Vashti. Vashti also made a 7-day party. You don't hear about anything that happened over there. You just know the place where it was at. So why was it important to talk about all the wealth that Achashverosh had and that he was showing it off? Okay. So Chaim Kanievsky has a sefer called Time of the Kra. Chaim Kanievsky is alive. It was in Bnei Brak. This is what it's called. Time of the Kra. Okay, this is an old version. I think there are like many, 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 many more since then, because every Purim, he writes a lot more. And then they publish it again. That's what he learns on Purim, Megillas Esther, and then he writes tons. There's tons and tons of Megillas Esther here, tons. So he asks this question. He says, why was it important in the story to go ahead and write and tell us about all the treasures? So he says as follows. He says that Achashverosh wanted them there as long as possible so they like him the best. So in order to do that, like I said before, he had to make things fresh. He had to keep things going, new, right? So six new a day for 180 days, things are good. Okay. After that was over, he had the people in Shushan. Now, the people in Shushan, I guess, they also were watching, all the treasures, reading the newspapers, this treasure, that treasure. They were experiencing it. So now they need something new. They need something fresh, right? So what's their freshness going to be? Oh, it's going to be fancy floors with tapestries. Like, wow, look at the walls, and look at this, and look at that. Okay, why is that important? Who cares about that? Why do we have to keep them excited? Because this is all explaining the end game. The end game of this whole story is that Achashverosh says to bring in Vashti. Why did he bring in Vashti? Why was that important? So the answer, it's a crazy thing. So the answer is because we see from the 180 days and the 7 days that Achashverosh was all he was trying to do were keep the people entertained. And a way to keep people entertained is by doing new things. So new treasures, then new types of floors and walls and things like that, make that really... Then after 7 days, the people in Shushan are like, okay, I like the floors, got it, I'm going home. No, no, you can't leave yet. There's something new to see. What else is there? Oh, Vashti. So the whole point of bringing out Vashti was because he felt he had to keep her entertained a little longer and he needed something new and exciting. So the wealth of the 180 days, the tapestries and the floors of the 7 days was all showing why he had to bring out Vashti at the end. And it's all part of the story. That's what caused him to bring out Vashti, which obviously is what caused the downfall of everything. Okay, so the beginning part over here is all to help this miracle happen that with Vashti coming, and we understand why that's true. Okay, now we fast forward to Vashti's party. Okay, Vashti's party in Pasuk Tes says Gam Vashti Amalka Astan Mishtein Hashem. She also made a party for the women. Why is that important? Gam always comes to include something. What's it coming to include over here? What's so important? Next, what does it say? Beis HaMalchus Asher HaMelech HaShverosh. It tells us it was in the actual kingdom. Right? Achashverosh did his thing outside. In the Chatzer Ginat HaBitan. Right? It was outside in the Chatzer. She did it in the house. That's interesting. And we don't know anything that happened at that party. Zero. It's actually completely irrelevant. Let's say she didn't make a party. Right? You're like, well, why would she make a party? Achashverosh made a party, like we said, because he didn't want people to rebel against him. Why did Vashti have to make a party? It was totally irrelevant, right? So here, the Vilna Gaon explains as well that the Vilna Gaon writes, the Chachamim Kiss writes also, that Vashti was actually setting herself up for her downfall. Why? Because she, it was pure, there was no reason to make this party. It's just that, well, if my husband made a party, I also want to show that I'm important. So Gam Vashti Amalka, for no reason at all, except for Gam. I also want. You know, it's like when two kids are fighting. So one gets one thing, the other person says, they want it. Why do you want it? You just had a drink. I also want. If she got it, I get it also. That's what Vashti was acting like. Gam Vashti Amalka. I also want to go ahead and have a party. And I want to show how important I am. We'll see in a minute. Vashti had a complex. She had there was a little bit of an issue. She couldn't, we'll see in a minute what the issue was. But I'm also an important person. So guess what, ladies? I'm going to bring you into my bedroom. I'm going to make this party in my house. When was the last time someone went into the private quarters of the king? I'm not going to do it on the outside, in the Ginat and Habitan like the king did. I'm going to do it in the Beis HaMalchus. I'm going to actually do it in the house. And that's what she did. To show off and to make it seem like she's very important. Okay? Now, why is that an important part of the story? Because if she would have done it anywhere else, like for example, later on in Perek Hey Pasuk Yud, Haman invites his wife to come. It says Vayishlach. It says they had to go send for her to come to wherever he was. But when it comes to over here in this Pasuk, when Achashverosh wants Vashti to come, he just says his little workers will go get her. She's right there. Right there outside in the Chatzer. She's right there in the house. Just come. This is an easy one. I'm running out of things to entertain my people. What do I do? We hear the women all talking. I'll just tell them to come outside. And it's easy. So the fact that she made her party right there in the house was Vashti setting herself up for the problem afterwards. Alternatively, like the Vilna Gaon explains over here, that the Medrash tells us that the men at the table, they all heard the women. You have to appreciate that the party of the women was right in the house and they were sitting right outside. So they're hearing all the women speaking. So what happened during the 7 day party was that the men at the table started arguing with one another whose wives were prettier. Okay? So that gave Achashverosh the idea when he heard that this is the conversation, that, oh, I'm going to bring out my wife who's the prettiest of them all. And went ahead and brought her right out. So the fact that they were in such close proximity to the party of the men, they were able to hear the chattering of the women. That caused a disagreement, and that made him come out, and that made Vashti go down. Which again, would have made no sense. But these things, because it was so easy to get her to come out, because she was so close, and because they were able to hear what was going on over there in the party of Vashti, that's how it brought out and gave Achshus the idea to bring her out, and that's why they ended up killing her. Okay, so the whole story, the whole party of Vashti, why was that there? That was also Hashem made it that she had this feeling like I need to go ahead and become show off. So she would make this party. She'd make this party close enough so that it could help with all the steps for her elimination. Okay, now. If you look at Pasuk Yud Aleph, there's something very, very interesting over here. If you pay attention to the words, it's fascinating, okay? Pasuk Yud Aleph says like this. Achashverosh says to bring Vashti. So what does he call Vashti? Lahavi es Vashti hamakal lefnei ha-melech. Vashti the queen. Bring Vashti the queen to the king. Okay? In Pasuk Yud Beis, it says, Vatima ein, that she refused. What does the pasuk call her? Hamalka Vashti. When he calls her to come, he says, Vashti Hamalka. First he calls her by her name, Vashti, then the Malka. When she says, I'm not coming, it says, Malka, whose name is Vashti. Okay? Then, again, in Pasuk Tesvav, it says, when he wants to know what to do with this woman who's not coming, what does he call her? Malka Vashti. So what is it? What, sometimes we call her Vashti the Malka, and sometimes we call her Malka the Vashti. Which one is it? Okay? So the Gra explains something very, very fascinating over here. Don't forget, we said that Vashti was a granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? She was born into the royal kingdom. Nowadays, what they call her? Princess? I don't know, right? I mean, she had a title, right? She was already, it's not like she just married in. She had it already. On the other hand, she did marry the king and became the queen. So what gave her importance? Did she come in with importance? Or did she marry into the importance? Okay? So this is a machlokes between Achashverosh and Vashti. So when Achashverosh says, I need you to come. I need you to come. So what's he say? Vashti Amalka. You're just a Vashti. You're nothing. That became Amalka. That became a queen. Because you married into me. So I'm in charge and I want you to come in. She refuses. She says, Hamalka Vashti. I'm already Amalka. Buddy, I did marry you, but that's not why I'm Amalka. I'm Amalka already before. I'm part of the royal family. Vashti. So there's this disagreement over here going on in between the two. And this is actually a point of contention as things move forward. Because what happens? She refuses. Okay, she refuses. And now the king is very upset. And he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what to do. Because on one hand, this is his wife. This is the biggest embarrassment that ever hit the planet. Right? But on the other hand, it's his wife, she's the most beautiful person in the world, and what's he going to do? So, Vayomer HaMelech, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomer HaMelech HaChachamim Yodei HaYitim. It's a very funny thing. He got the wise people that know the times. What does that mean, know the times? So, the Gra explains that there's certain people that know what the law is. You know, you call a judge, he tells you, the law is this, stop, finish. Then there are people that like, they know how, you know, like in this year we should do it like that. This year the law should be like this. You know, like, they know how to be lenient. Okay? So he was looking for a leniency. He was looking for a way to get out of this that it's not going to cause a whole problem. So he went to the Yodei Hitim, Ki Kein Dvar Melech, Fnei Kol Yodei Dat V'din. And then he also brought these other people. It says seven people. Av HaKarov Yilav, the people that are close to him. Listen to the names. Doesn't really matter so much. Karshina, Shesar, Admasas, Hashish, Meris, Marsana, Mimuchan. Okay, the seventh one, the least important of all seven, is this guy Mimuchan. Okay, so he's asking his advisors what to do. Kedas Malasos. What's the das? What's the letter of the law? To do with Malka Vashti. Because on the other hand, maybe she does have a point. She was a Malka first, so maybe like it wasn't for me to go ahead and ask her to come in. Right? It's like, it's unclear. Did he have the right to do this, and therefore she rebelled, or didn't she? Unclear, right? So what's the answer going to be? The answer is going to be all about whether what's the law? How do you judge this thing? So we have a problem. The Yodei Ha'itim, not we, but Yodei Ha'itim, the people who know how to be lenient, they might say, oh yeah, she was really a king, a queen before, and she has a say in the matter. The people that go by the letter of the law, they might say that, no, it's really Achashverosh's call, and therefore she rebelled, and therefore we're going to kill her. So what happens? So Vayomer Memuchan, the seventh guy, the least guy, the least of the smart, he brought his seven people in, the last guy, Memuchan, he pops up quickly, because he knows that he might lose this one, and he says, oh, it's not even about just you, it's about everyone, this is bigger, this has to go to like the CEO here, this is not just about, you know, who made her queen. This is a whole big thing, so everyone's husbands and etc. And he gives a whole speech to explain why you have to kill him. That's not what Achashverosh was worried about, really. He just wanted to know, like, what's the rule here? Like, can I get a buy on this one? And Mumuchan, the last guy, he pops in and he says, "Oh no, there's a whole new issue that you haven't thought about. What about all the other husbands?" Okay, now who was this Mumuchan? So the Gemara tells us it was Haman. Okay, this is the first place that Haman pops in the story. The Haman right away was set, and it is amazing, as the Gemara points out. Haman was setting up his downfall right there and then. Because if Haman would have been quiet, if Memuchan, the last guy, the most insignificant guy, would have just been quiet, there's a very good chance that there would have been a leniency passed and that Vashti would have stayed in. Vashti would have stayed in. You wouldn't have had Esther, you wouldn't have had and Haman would have got his way at the end. So Haman jumping the gun and convincing Achashverosh that you got to judge this one in a bigger, broader national judgment case against all husbands was Haman setting himself up to get destroyed all the way at the end. Unbelievable thing. And you see how the whole thing already is going in the story over here. Okay. Sorry. Okay.
Sorry, what
does Haman mention? The name Memuchan, at the end of Pasuk, in Pasuk, 14. Okay, there lists seven people that advise him, so Memuchan's the last. And then, in Pasuk 16, it says, Vayom Memuchan, he's the one that came in front of the king, and he said, so Memuchan, the Gemara says, is Haman. It's the same person. And the Gemara asks, so why was he called Memuchan? Because he was Muchan, he was preparing his downfall. That's why he had that. The name Muchan already showed inside it that Haman was preparing him going down. Okay? So we see over here this already. You see all the movement that's going on in every single place. Like anytime you see something in this story, you have to ask, why in the world is that important in this story? I got it. It's exciting. But we weren't writing here a storybook that's going to be exciting for all times. The whole idea of this is to show how even at every step, when you don't even know what's going on, it's quiet, it's secretive, there's Hashem moving places along the way. The Vilna Gaon gives a mashal to this. He says there was a king, right? Every parable has a king. So there was a king and a son. So there was a king and a son, and the son, the king loved his son tremendously. So all the people that were close to the king were very jealous of the son. Okay, one time the son did something wrong, so the king had to punish him. So he threw him out into the forest. But the king loved his son. So he was very scared that if he'd leave him alone in the forest, you know, there could be wild animals in the forest. There could also be all these slaves of his that hate the son. They could just go into the forest and kill him. So what did he do? He put some of his trusted servants in the forest to always like be watching over him. They'd hide in the trees, they'd hide in the bushes, so that the son would never know that he's in exile, the son. But the people watching over him. So one day, a bear came and was about to kill the son. He's about to grab him, and all of a sudden comes swinging on, like Tarzan, like swinging in. Some guy kills the bear and runs away. Okay, so I was like, wow, how did that happen? I'm alone in the forest. All of a sudden, there's some guy comes. Okay, then a few days later, there's a lion. A lion comes and he attacks the sun. And all of a sudden, another guy comes out of nowhere and just takes down the lion. And after a while, the son realizes that even though his father kicked him out and sent him into the forest, into the exile, but he still had his people in place to make sure that everything was going to be okay. And that, as the Gemara says, that's the whole story of this of the Megillah, that Hashem exiled us. Okay, we got Beis Mikdash was destroyed. We got kicked out of Eretz Yisrael. We got sent into the exile, and Hashem still had his people in place, setting up all the situations. We never even realized what was going on, but it was all making the whole story happen in the way. Okay. We could move forward here, but I only have two more minutes. So I'm going to throw you some Dvar Torahs about Purim. You can have pocket Dvar Torahs. Good? Okay, here we go. There's one thing, the party had a lot of stuff in there, we said, right? There's one thing that's missing in the party. I don't know what's missing. There's one thing that every party has that this party didn't have. Music. No music in this party, which is funny. How could you have a party without music? Okay, so the Manos Halevi, Shlomo Alkovitz, the author of Lecha Dodi, in his commentary on Megillas Esther, he explains as follows. He said that Achashverosh knew, everybody in Pesach. Okay, Achashverosh knew that when you have music, music is able to elevate you to high places, and he wanted to make sure that there be no spiritual energies going on at this party, and therefore he specifically had no music there. So that none of it, specifically the Jews, would have the opportunity to, get close to Hashem or feel higher in that way. And instead, they would just indulge and they'd get totally brought into Achashverosh's world. It's an important lesson that we see about music, the power of music. Even Achashverosh appreciated the power of music and therefore took it out of his party to make sure that no one would get anything from it. Okay. Okay, here's another one. A gematria. Throw out a gematria. Okay? Baruch Mordechai. Baruch Mordechai means blessed is Mordechai. Is the same gematria as Arur Haman. Curses Haman. Okay? Same thing. Baruch Mordechai, Arur Haman. Arura Zeresh. Cursed is Zeresh. Is the same as Esther Lebracha. That Esther will be for Bracha. So we're cursing Haman's wife, but We're giving a bracha to Esther. This is all from Mechayim Kanievsky, by the way. Okay. Charvona is the person that gave the Eitzah to Achashverosh, the advice to kill Haman. And we sing. Gam Charvona Zachor L'Tov. That Charvona is even mentioned for Tov. So Charvona, the Gematria is V'hu Zachor B'Tov. He is mentioned for good. Okay. Last one. I think. Okay, and it's related to Al Anisim. So in Al Anisim, which we say on Purim, it's important to read through it beforehand. You don't have that many opportunities to say Al Anisim. It's not like Hanukkah. You get every day to work on it. You one shot. So you want to learn Al Anisim. So in Al Anisim, we say, and it's based on the words in the Megillah, that what did Haman want to do? He bikesh lahashmid, laharog, ulabed is kol hayudim. He tried to destroy all the Jews, minar va'ad zaken, taf v'nashim, from the young to the old, the babies and the wives, and the mothers, the women. The yom echad, all in one day. So why all these words? Laharog means to kill. Lashmid means to destroy. Laharog means to kill. Labed means to get to lose. Right? It was just three nice words that we just, want to be poetic here. What's this idea? It's obviously not. Every word means something very important. So, The Al-Sheikh, also buried in Sfat, right? The Al-Sheikh has also a commentary on Megillas Esther called the Masei Smosha, and he says as follows. This is fascinating, and it's important for us to appreciate how intense Haman's decree was. It wasn't just to wipe out all the Jews. He actually wanted to do it in a very disgusting way, and that's what he speaks out here. That Lashmid means to kill the children, okay? Laharog means to kill the elders. But you kill the children first so the elders could see it and watch it happen. So not only do you kill the parents, the elders, but they're in pain, not from being killed, but they're in pain from experiencing that their kids are being killed. Okay? And then what's la'abed? La'abed means to get rid of the bodies so they won't be buried. You know, so Haman wanted to, first I'm going to kill the kids, and I'm going to have the elders watch this happen. Then I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to kill them. And then I'm going to get rid of their bodies so no one can find them to bury. Like nowadays, right? You could go to the kvarim of people and daven there and things like that. You have no idea where these people are buried. A terrible thing. Okay? It's called all the Jews, minar v'adzakein. Like we said, you start murdering the children, the nar, and then the elders. Taf are babies. Babies that are normally, it's understood as nursing, they're still nursing from their mother. So they would take the taf, and then the nashim, then the mother themselves, who is nursing the baby. So the mother could see them taking away their baby that's nursing, and then go ahead and kill them. And biyom echad. It had to be all done in one day. It was a major genocide, right? All done in one day. Why was this all going to be done in one day? So here is a little bit more Kabbalistic, but we spoke about this on Shabbos a little bit, that there's a sitter called the Dover Shalom. And he explains that Haman's goal was to show that B'nai Yisrael do not have achdus. They don't have any unity. And that's why he said to Achashverosh, you can kill them. Don't be worried. You can kill them. Why? Because Yeshno Am Echad Mefuzar Mefarad Bin Amim. The nation is Mefuzar Mefarad. They're totally scattered. They're totally apart. There's no unity amongst the Jewish people. And therefore, when there's no unity, that's when the Jewish people can be killed. So you can do that. So his whole idea was about unity. And we explained on Shabbos, that's one of the reasons we have Mishloach Manos, to counter that. In order for us to generate unity. Okay? Have that in mind when you're giving your Shalach Manos to someone who you could generate unity with. Okay? So the whole idea is that we weren't a unit and we want to become a unit. So the Biyom Echad, he wanted to kill all Biyom Echad to stress this idea of oneness. It's all on one. That the Jewish people, they don't have this idea of oneness. But I could get it all in one day symbolizing this idea of Yom Echad. And we have to try to break that. We have to try to show that we are Echad. And that's what happened. Vayikalu ha-Yehudim v'arehem, that the Jewish people, vayikalu, they gathered together and they fasted. They became one. Right? Unfortunately, sometimes when we have tremendous difficulties and we're in problems, and all of a sudden we don't care anymore what this Jew looks like, what that Jew looks like, right? Everyone's able to get together and they're able to put aside their differences for a common cause. So unfortunately, that's what happened here. Right, we were going to get wiped out in a very disgusting, terrible way, and we went ahead and we came together. By Yikalu Ayudim, we all became one, which is why on Titus Esther is such a powerful day, because it was a day that everyone came together to be one without differences. There was Achdus, unity in Klal Yisrael and the Jewish people, and that allowed us to be successful in the war afterwards. So Haman was trying to make it biyom echad. That has to be all in one day to show that we're not echad, to show that we don't have that unity, and we have to try to go ahead and counter that and achieve unity. Okay, we're good. Okay, everyone, you should have a Freilich and Purim. Shkayach. Oh, the Vilna Gaon says it's a Medrash. You want to know exactly?